Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 288. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
From very cold Bloomington. I hope it's not as cold where you are.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Good.
Other than being cold, fine.
Yeah, well, welcome to Minnesota. Yeah, well, that's right, you've been here for a while.
Early, yeah, but welcome to early winter. Too early.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome to January.
Holy crap. In November.
Oh, my gosh. So, Mr. Thickens?
Yeah.
You went to
MobCon.
MobCon. And so tell us about that.
Yeah, where mobile minds connect. So I was just connecting with all sorts of minds for 2 days. Yeah, I was the Minovate representative there and talked to a lot of great folks and heard some good speakers, some great out-of-town speakers. We had a guy from Twitter who's head of telco strategy and development, gave an interesting talk on the evolution of Twitter, or the constant revolution of Twitter, as he called it. He talked about their new Fabric initiative and you know, gave a lot of the stats of Twitter growth and so forth. The most interesting one to me, and I'd heard this before, is there are 500 million monthly users, but there's just a little over half that who actually have accounts. So there are almost as many lurkers on Twitter as there are people with accounts, which is interesting.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And then we had a couple of speakers from LinkedIn, one on the first day and another one yesterday. But probably the highlight was, and the most interesting speaker was Alan Wiseman, the new VP of Target.com and mobile at Target, who's actually a Portland guy, but he's commuting here. And interesting fellow. He's done like 6 startups.
Hmm.
And he runs the mobile teams. I guess he kind of ran the Cartwheel app team for the last couple of years, but then he joined full-time fairly recently, I think within the last 6 or 8 months, maybe. I'm not really sure about that. So he was the midday keynoter the first day. And
And it looks like his startups were all in the retail space, right?
Yes, e-commerce.
Shop Igniter and some others. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And he was a pretty entertaining and, you know, interesting speaker. And but he closed by saying, "We don't look to vendors for technology now. We lead it." And I immediately got somebody, I tweeted it, and immediately got a smart-ass comment from somebody. It's like, oh, you weren't trying to be, I forget the term he used, anyway, it was a smart-ass remark. Yeah. And I said, well, I guess they don't lead in security technology. But anyway, in other technology, they're leading.
Yeah.
So it was great.
They don't look to vendors, but I'm just trying to think. They use a lot of vendors in town. Why?
Well, they do, but the point is they're trying to innovate themselves. They're not waiting, sitting around twiddling their thumbs, waiting for vendors to show up with solutions. They're going to go for it themselves. Is the idea, and they have hired something like 157 engineers. I didn't hear over what time, but I tweeted that he said they now have 21 product teams and they've hired 157 engineers. So,
Well, you know, what's interesting is Walmart has always been looked at as a leader in information technology for retail. And, and actually for a lot of the Fortune 500, having Target at least aspire to leadership, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, he was an excellent speaker, and Target had a big presence at this event. They were really the lead sponsor, I'd say. They had the biggest booth. They had a lot of people there. They sponsored lunch, which was fantastic. I mean, hats off to them. And obviously, they're there for recruiting purposes. I think I had either three or four target recruiters like follow me immediately when I started tweeting. So I did live tweet the whole thing, and I don't know, I must have, you know, 100 or more tweets up there.
Well, I didn't see any tweets at all from you that showed people following you, or I think I'm being followed.
I think I'm being followed. No, and I didn't tweet on Minovate. I could have, I guess. I didn't think to do that. I did it on my account. But anyway, it's out there. And maybe I took a lot of photos with my fancy new 6 Plus. So maybe I'll put up a photo set and post that on Minovate.
So I think it looks really, I mean, I love the pictures, Graham, and it looks like it was a great event. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get over there, but that's a great event. So they've really grown that sucker huge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't think it was quite as big as last year, but it was a different venue, so it was kind of hard to tell. It didn't seem like quite as many people, but, you know, some people come one day only. And you know, and so it was kind of hard to tell, but it culminated with the announcing the winners of the startup pitches on Friday afternoon at 3:30.
The mob demo stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of fun.
My little peanut on the go,
that's so cool. It's a mommy app.
But it sounds like it was a concept app. It wasn't an actual working app
It's still in testing. You're right about that. It's not generally available. I think
how do you demo a concept?
She did. Okay. You know, that must not have been a requirement that they had to have an app in the app store.
Oh, okay. You know. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
But I think, as I recall, she may be recruiting, you know, beta testers. But it is an app for new parents that need to leave their child with relatives or someone else. And instead of having a whole set of instructions to have to leave with them, you can do it all on your mobile, you know? So it's an interesting concept. And she's a product manager somewhere. So you get the feeling that she knows what she's doing and she's building this thing right.
Right.
As soon as I saw it, I thought, that's the winner, you know? And sure enough, she was. She got 20,000 in development resources from MentorMate. It might be 25,000. I can't remember now. And then she got 5,000 in cash.
Well, so, I mean, if you're going to actually use something like development resources, then at a conceptual app is probably the best one to pick.
There you go.
Hey, did the Target guy talk about, you know, Target bought that company Powered Analytics, the shopping technology company, and did he talk about that at all?
He did not mention that. That was news to me today to see that link. I hadn't caught that story.
Yeah, well, it was sort of obscure, and in fact, I think it was in one of the Pittsburgh rags only, and then a couple of people tweeted it that I follow. And but it's a big data play, and it's all about essentially collating everything. Tim, have you looked at this at all?
Yeah, I was in the retail trades this week too. I stuck a Google Cache link of their website that tells you a little bit more about what they do.
Oh yeah, it's about beacons. Right.
It is, and it's kind of like a in-store version of the Amazon prediction engine to recommend products to you.
Interesting.
But it does it with your mobile phone, so it connects to you to the store's mobile app, and then it's a cloud-based system that, you know, given the selection of goods that are in Target, both in the store and online, recommends them stuff. So that they've already redirected the site to target.com. So you really don't, I mean, none of the stories that I've read about it really get into the nitty gritty of what they do. So to see that, you have to go to the Google Cache, which will probably be, you know, gone by next week.
Well, you know, what's what's interesting is, sorry about that. you can really start to understand why so many retailers want to push for currency, their own Apple Pay type product, because if you're going to have the ability to not only do recommendations, but maybe do predictive analytics, when somebody walks into a store, you yep. already know what they've purchased in the past. You've got that history, and you can say, oh, by the way, that product that you looked at 12 times is now on sale. You know, somebody's going to say, oh, geez, you know, they'll walk over there and buy it. And you can't do that unless you've got the point of sale information that you can collate. Of course, they'll have that regardless, I would think, but
yeah,
you can't necessarily do it quite the same way.
Integrate it, or as easily. Yeah. Well, good for Target. I mean, they,
it was a busy week for Target, because they also did a Mobilize MN event, on, what was it, Wednesday night? Called Designing the Flagship Target. Brad Ellis from Target was talking about, actually a consultant to Target, to talk about the mobile app that they've rebuilt and redone, and walked through a lot of the changes to that site. Also some of the tools they use to execute their plans and things like that. So it was a big week for them.
Yes.
Yeah. I did not know about that meetup, Mobilize MN.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I didn't hear about it till I was at MobCon myself. Somebody
which was the day after it. So yeah.
Yes, right. Yeah, somebody mentioned it. One of the Target people, I assume. Other thing.
That was well attended too. So
one other thing from MobCon, I ran into your Mobile March friends, Justin and Kristen.
Oh, good. Good.
Chatted with them, had lunch with them, and I was actually able to introduce Justin to Bjorn.
Oh, he'd never met Bjorn?
No, they'd never actually met. I was shocked, you know. So that's interesting. Anyway. Yeah, it was fun running into all of them.
Good deal.
Interesting.
Big week for mobile.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the articles that I have been sort of scratching my head over is that the nerdery...
Better your head than something else.
Yes. You mean my elbow? Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, about the nerdery expanding into Phoenix, and they're Arizona, and they're planning to hire more than 150 folks.
Yeah, well, we've heard that from the nerdery before, I believe.
Well, we have, but here's the thing. Why Phoenix?
Because it's warm and it's wintertime.
End of
story.
It's much less expensive than, say, California, too.
Or Austin. Yeah. I mean, they listed a couple of other cities they were considering, and it's like, yeah, it's cheap. So,
well, that's very true. In comparison.
And I'm sure you get people to move out there, you know?
Well, yeah. Especially
they already got Mike Johnson to move there, apparently.
Oh, that's a Minneapolis guy that they're sending out there.
Is that he's running the office out there.
They had a big presence at MobCon, but I didn't get a chance to chat with them. Their lead evangelist guy was there, who I know. But they're still on that growth curve, I guess.
What happened last time was, you know, and I commented about it, is they commented they were going to hire 100 people in
Chicago, I think it was.
2 or 3 months. This was a while back, and then they ended up laying off a bunch of folks.
So. Yeah, like 2 weeks later. Like
2 weeks later, there was a big layoff.
It's like, what? Yeah, that. I hope they don't get into that trap again. I don't think they will.
I hope not. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So what's this about Best Buy Geek Squad? What is this story?
Yeah, we've got cars. Let's deliver shit.
I thought it was an interesting idea. You know, why not use the Geek Squad to do local deliveries?
Sure, why not?
In the Beatles. Well, they have the vans, too, but in the Beatles, they could deliver a lot of little stuff.
Yeah, and then they could upsell you while you're there in their house, you know?
Yeah.
Say, oh, by the way, I can hang that TV on the wall.
Yeah.
And by the way, a 70-inch would fit in that space.
That's right.
Yeah,
those 4K TVs are pretty good. Did you hear?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, how would you like this 16x20 portrait of Robert Stevens to hang on your wall? No, just kidding.
That's a free poster.
Is that in charcoal or?
Yeah.
I just thought it was a good idea, and
it is an interesting idea. Why not?
Who knows if they're going to do it or not?
My dad has a barn. Let's put on a show section.
But I'll tell you that there's been a lot of talk over and over and over again about why not leveraging the U.S. Postal Service for deliveries. especially same day deliveries that these guys are all on their routes and they're going right by these homes anyway. So
somebody's doing that. Isn't one of the major retailers or somebody doing that? I thought I read that where they have contracted with the Postal Service. I don't know. Can't remember who that was. Makes sense.
Well, I know FedEx uses the Postal Service.
Yeah.
FedEx does. Yeah. There's one connection. Yeah.
Well, in Bloomberg back, I'll see if I can find the article back sometime earlier part of this year, they were talking about the Postal Service was actually testing same day delivery service.
Mm-hmm.
They were starting it in San Francisco, of course, because everybody will get it and do it probably. I'll see if I can find that article.
Okay.
But it just makes sense that they would move forward.
Sure. People will be ordering like a candy bar and, you know, remember that back in the .com days and, you know, with Web Van and all that.
Yeah. How much money
all did Web Van? Were like ordering one candy bar.
Yeah. How much money did Web Van burn through?
Oh God, like hundreds of millions of VC money. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was just, but I just remember pets.com, mm-hmm. you know, with their little puppet mascot.
Yeah.
And when I was at Vignette, we were trying to figure out what the next branding would be for
the next Vignette.
and so I put together a fake HTML page that was an article about how Vignette was embracing the former pets.com mascot. And I had a picture of the puppet and, you know, I had quotes from our CEO in there and all that. Well, I sent it to my inside sales guy just to be funny. And he sent it around and ended up with my CEO. And he sends out this note and goes, okay, this was really funny, but who did this? You know, of course nobody fessed up, including me. Anyway,
so who did this? I'm coming after him.
Yeah.
He did not appreciate the association.
No.
Oh, well, he got his eventually.
Oh, what are you going to do?
I think he did okay.
I think he suffered.
Yeah. So, Timster, you put out this Comcast article about the tool that makes cable more accessible for the visually impaired. Is that just because it was rolled out here?
Well, that's a story that Julio did this week on the the new feature that comes with X1, and it is available here in the Twin Cities for people that either blind or visually impaired.
Gotcha.
And it reads the menus to you if you have the X1 system. So, you know, that it does open up accessibility to listen to the news and music and other things using the Comcast X1 box.
Yep.
That's kind of a super duper version of a program guide, and it allows you to also watch on mobile devices too.
Okay.
But what he wrote about was the remote feature that allows the talking menus.
Gotcha.
So I thought I'd put it in. I always look to see what Julio's up to, and this was the most interesting story that he filed this week.
Very nice. Comcast also in the news saying they agree with President Obama's stance on net neutrality.
I'm not sure how that's how that fits, right?
Hey, everyone wants net neutrality, but they don't understand the way that the internet really works. The internet is not free and open.
Right.
And the last thing you want is the government of all people regulating the internet. I mean, just, you know, the FCC wants to do it in the worst way, and now Obama wants that to happen too. And most people, especially in technology, want this to happen because they somehow really don't understand the way that the internet does work. That there are two versions of the internet. There's the part that comes to your house, and yeah, we want more choice and we want better prices and all this stuff, right? And we don't want our ISP to determine what we get, so they don't want the throttle Netflix and whatever, right? But what people don't understand is that if the government gets into this regulation, you're going to have the worst case scenario. You're going to have you know, all sorts of prohibition against content. You're going to have, you know, the government as your gatekeeper, and it's just going to be a disaster. Plus, you're going to probably pay more money because it'll throttle innovation. So I think it's a terrible idea, personally.
So well, you aren't a big fan of the Affordable Care Act, then?
No, that's a terrible idea as well.
Oh, would you stop? Come on.
Well, so here's the thing. All I can say is that I'm glad that that the highways in the state of Minnesota are not managed by a private company. That they're open and anybody can drive on them. You can drive. I mean, within reason, you can't drive a semi trailer truck at 80,000 pounds across a bridge that's rated for 10,000 or on roads that it'll break up. I mean, that, you know, that's just makes sense, but, there
or
are
bridges that fall down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, come on. Yeah.
So tell me, yeah, go on, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I just wanted to say, I mean, it's, and we've been through this before, Tim.
Yep.
In terms of
we
arguing
have, and
back
I know
and
you
forth.
Disagree with my position, but I'm just putting out there the other worst side
case,
of this.
The worst case scenario, because, you know, where we live in America is sucks so bad right now because of government regulation.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
No, I'm just saying that the internet, if you want a free and open internet, you don't want the FCC to regulate
well,
it.
Phil brought up the healthcare thing, so I'll just say one thing, is that the reason that all of the health insurance companies right now are saying publicly that, oh, by the way, if you have a pre-existing condition, that's no problem, is not because of the law, but because that came in and it was way overdue. And the free market would never have done that. Remember that if health insurance companies are left to their own devices, that they will only insure healthy people. Because if they don't, they will lose money. If they have to insure sick people.
It's really the same thing with what's happening in the net neutrality thing, Tim. And I'm not saying that in principle, yes, I completely understand that, you know, leave it to its own devices, leave it free and open. But the fact of the matter is you got that whole concept of the Netflix Comcast thing, the Fastlane debate going back and forth. And ultimately, Netflix had to pay Comcast more money.
Right. And that's the way it should be because they're using more of their bandwidth. It costs more money to call Netflix traffic. They have to put in more routers and switches to be able to switch that to Comcast customers.
So free and open is a loose term? Is that what we're using?
No, this is the way the internet has been since day one. People that people pay for transit. People that have a lot of traffic pay for transit. That is the way that it has worked for years.
Yep. I agree.
It's not something new.
This whole net neutrality thing is like the Netflix Benevolent Act. It makes me sick, you know. It's like they're you know, they love it. They sit back there and just laugh their asses off, you know. If this thing goes through, it's like manna from heaven for them, you know. And it's like we're all supposed to believe that, oh, this is going to help the little guy who wants to be a Netflix someday. Yeah, good luck, you know. I agree.
Wait a second, Graham. You say you represent startups and you help guide startups.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't.
But you're talking about something
they aren't held back. There have been plenty of successful startups that aren't held back by the existing, the way the internet works now, you know.
But
there isn't a great need to just to protect.
But Graham, you're saying that only to a certain level. I mean, God forbid a startup should rise to Netflix level. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that there aren't any impediments on them now. You know, this is a false argument. The whole thing is a false argument. You know, I totally agree with Tim's position, you know, and with Mark Cuban, who said the same thing this week.
Oh, well, there's a guy to rally behind.
Yeah, but okay, so let me just point out one technology. that we know that Comcast, for example, in the past had was doing packet shaping to stop telephony packets from having a quality of service across their network. And so now, fast forward, let's say that net neutrality loses and it becomes a pay-for-play type of internet. And Comcast is in the business of delivering telephony services, and anyone else who's delivering voice over IP that's paying to play is going to have a higher quality of service and HD quality audio and so forth. And those that can't pay can't play. And so it would be very, very trivial for any internet service provider to be able to do packet shaping and provide better access for packets for those who are playing than those who are not. So a startup like Telxio, one of my favorites, my cool things of the week, wouldn't be able to play as a startup because they could not pay for the packets. The barrier to entry would be too high.
You know what I say to that, Steve? Then they need to hone their pitch and go raise money like everybody else does that becomes a successful startup. Some bootstrap successfully, hooray, hooray. But a large, large number of them raise money. And they do that by perfecting a pitch, by creating a value proposition, by articulating it, and going out and saying, the market needs this, I need money to grow it, please write me a check. And it happens every day. So, you know.
Yeah, but
the internet has worked just fine up till now.
Yeah, that's why it should remain neutral.
And it is. It will. It's Tim, right? It's existed pretty well so far.
The wholesale internet has never been neutral.
Right.
It's always based on the more traffic that goes in one direction mostly. So these backbone guys, they have deals, peering agreements, and most of them are, you know, equal deals where no money changes hands. They just agreed to handle each other's traffic because there's about the same amount of traffic running in both directions. Mm-hmm. The problem with people like Netflix is that the traffic is moving in one direction. It's all coming, it's all streaming down through the providers, the ISP's networks, which cost the ISP more money. That's why they have transit agreements so that people like Netflix pay for that transit. And if they don't, then they don't have as much infrastructure in those ISPs to handle the traffic, and it gets overwhelmed. It has nothing to do with throttling. It has everything to do with overwhelming the switches that are in the ISP to handle that traffic.
Well, that's a supply-side argument. So what about a demand-side argument? So if I want to have access to everything, right, then A, I have to pay more money, or B, the infrastructure has to be accelerated. So for example, there's some new research that's come out about pushing 1 gigabit per second over copper. And, you know, in theory, within 2 to 3 years that we'll have, you know, broadband over copper, and that'll get the phone companies to be able to leverage their current infrastructure. So, you know, there are things like that that are out there on the horizon.
And you'll be able to power your car with water too.
Well, I know.
That's never going to happen. You're never going to get gigabit fiber speed from a copper line.
Right. Well,
I mean, they will be able to get it to probably be like currently your connection, which is what, 100 or 50, whatever it is. They'll probably be able to get there, but they will not get to gigabit speeds with copper.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. I wish them luck, but I just don't think it's possible. Yeah.
No, I mean, I agree with you, Tim, that it costs money to put together the peering points and to, you know, make the peering points work and function better and all of that. But, you know, you still can't push out every other provider just because they're not also, you know. Because if you're Comcast, you say, well, look, Netflix paid to play to deliver their stuff, and so their stuff's going to come through great. But oh, by the way, PBS, you're not paying, so your stuff's going to not stream very well, which is exactly what's happening. And ironically, the Xfinity app doesn't stream very well either over Comcast, which I still can't figure out why. Netflix comes through great.
It's because it's a shared network, and depending on the time of day, you have
I have a business connection. So at night, the frequency is not slammed.
Yeah, but increasingly businesses are running around the clock too, so that's not always true, is it?
No, my throughput is significantly greater after 5:30, 6 o'clock at night on my business connection. But anyway,
we'll revisit
this when we get to the one cool thing. So,
well, at least we're equally balanced. Where Graham and I are on one side, and you and Steve are on the other.
Yeah, welcome to absolutely. It's Minovate Gridlock.
Yeah, there we go. I'll reach across the aisle and say that I'll give Comcast another dollar a month.
Well, I've got one more question before we get on to the next topic.
Yeah.
It's for Graham.
It's incendiary.
Do you agree with me on my stance on the Affordable Health Care Act?
Of course he does.
I forget how you articulated it earlier, but
I said it was a terrible idea.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I got not only do I agree with you, I'll one up that further. It's a big pile of shit.
Ooh.
Okay, how's that?
Wow. All right.
Don't get me started.
Go ahead and tell that to the millions of people that now have health care that didn't have health care.
Yeah, there aren't that many.
Feel free to take it away.
It's Medicaid, you know. It's out there. No one gets left behind, really. They can walk into any hospital, but let's not go there.
Fun fact to know and tell. I did a study in the under 150 bed hospital space for a local tech company. Spent 3 months deeply embedded in that space, and do you know that the under 150 hospital space, which is the lion's share of hospitals across the country, their average gross margin is 1.7%. And so if they have any hiccups in their supply chain or anything else, they lose money. And so they're living hand to mouth. And that is one of the reasons that IT, information technology in hospitals, is where most of the Fortune 1000 was back in the late 90s. And this push for electronic health records, this push for outcome-based medicine, all the things that are wrapped into the Affordable Care Act makes perfect sense, because one of the reasons that healthcare is so wildly inefficient is because there's not technology applied. So that's been one of the intended consequences of the Affordable Care Act. That's separate from the Fox News view that it's welfare for the masses. So that's my take. I think that there's a lot of good parts to it. But anyway,
it's not welfare for the masses. The Fox News. It's the whole thing has been one big lie, but let's not even go there.
Oh my God.
If you have your doctor, you can keep your doctor. You know, I mean, that's what it's been.
You know what? I had an argument with my doc, John Beecher, who started up and owns Edina Family Physicians. And I gave him crap one day because I said, hey, could you do me a favor? And he goes, what's that? And I said, could you at least have one of your HD TVs in the lobby play something other than Fox News? Just so you can have a balanced approach.
Fair and balanced.
So at any rate, he and I got into this discussion.
Maybe?
So this was in 2011, and we got into this discussion. And as a small business owner, he's going on and on about how you can't do it. You know, he's barking the party line from Fox News about how you can't, you lose your own doctor, you won't be able to choose me, and costs will go up, and this will happen, and the sky will fall, and all of that. And I said, John, have you read the bill? No, well, no, but, blah, blah, blah. And this and that. I said, I've read the entire bill. And he goes, no, you haven't. And I took out my iPad and I showed him the app that had the Affordable Care Act on it. And I said, I've read the entire thing. And everything that you just said is not true. And I've known this guy for 26 years, so I can give him rations of shit. And I said, I actually read the bill. And so all that stuff, it's just not true. It's absolutely not true. And he did a little bit of a humma, but we went around and around and around about this. And this whole thing about the guy that came out that said he was the architect of it and all of that. He's even backpedaling because the things that he said is bullshit. So,
it really kind of comes down to this. Don't rely on a company whose whole sole purpose is to garner more viewers to guide your decision. Get the facts.
Well, and
doesn't matter. I don't care where you fall. Just get the facts.
Well, you know what I said to John? I said, John, as a small business owner with premiums and for a family of four and for our out of pocket in 2010 was almost $25,000. He said, no. I said, yeah, $25,000. And he said, what? And I said, well, okay, well, I had this procedure and this happened and we've had these prescriptions and here's how much the premiums were and all of that. And I said, John, the average income, the average gross for a family of four in the United States is under $50,000. How many of those families of four can afford to write checks for $25,000 in a year? And boy, has that changed with the Affordable Care Act. You know, we're still paying high premiums and we still have a high deductible. The kids now have their own health care at their respective, work and school. But the costs were so dramatically high that I know that we were not doing things from a preventative health care standpoint that we should have done in 2011 and 2012, because it was one of those things where it's like, I don't have another $20,000 or $30,000 to shell out. And so we were just not doing it. Now that's going to come back. If people do that, if they defer, which they will do, if they don't have healthcare or we revert back to an old system, is that at some point those people will retire. And all the things that they didn't take care of are going to come home to roost. And what are we going to do? Just let them die? I mean, they're going to have to pay for it at some point. Anyway, I'll shut up.
Death panels. Oh,
yeah.
Welcome to the panels. Affordable Care Act podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So U.S.
Talk about tariffs now.
U.S. and China move toward ending tariffs on high-tech gear. This will actually... help us. Because if China says, okay, no more tariffs, we can, sell stuff and it's going to be about 25% less for Chinese, buyers. And that would be a very good thing for us. Of course, they're not going to buy Cisco routers because we put back doors in them. But other than that, should be good. So I thought that was a real positive.
That is. Let's go. Or Mac Pros. Mac Pros.
Made here in the U.S.
Yeah. Made here in the U.S. of A. From Chinese parts.
Yeah. So this article about government planes scoop up cell phone data.
That's right up your alley.
Oh, brother.
Did you guys think this was a big deal?
No.
I didn't. I mean, the big deal about the whole article was the fact that they're also inadvertently scooping up stuff from people that are around those who they are targeting. And there's no way to just grab one signal, as far as I can see. We're following Tim Elliott with a drone or a small plane, and we just want just his cell phone signals. Like it doesn't work like that.
Well, they've got those fake towers. What do they call the stingray, where they go in. And they're able to either jam or locate. So, like when the president is in some. Some urban area, they'll run these things and they'll basically just jam the traffic for security.
Yeah. So you can't remotely set off a bomb or something, right?
Right. Yep. Yeah. But they also can use it to locate people based on their cell phone. Innocent people will be part of, their data will be part of this, but they are looking at after the criminals here and they're going to have the data one way or another anyway. I'm not up in arms about it. Yeah, I'd like to have more freedom and I'd like to have more privacy, but it's in this age, it's just not going to happen, I don't think.
Yeah.
So wringing hands about it's not going to make it any better.
Well, I felt that way when, this article comes out or this buzz comes out about iOS's first major malware challenge.
Yeah.
And it was all about these researchers at FireEye that discovered a pathway for malware makers and data snoopers to install iOS software that replaces native apps. And I thought, well, wait a minute. If you don't jailbreak your iPhone, you don't have to worry. Right. Also, if you don't just install from a developer's link that you get in an email, or do something stupid. And, you know, it's almost like some of this stuff is, oh, by the way, if your laptop is open and running and someone comes in your house and steals it, they can actually use your email. It's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah. And Apple said they haven't heard of any users that this is nailed, that has nailed.
So the shoe's on the other foot here, Steve, because you've brought up how insecure Android is for the years. And it's the same sort of deal where, yeah, if you get stuff out of the Google Play Store or out of the Amazon App Store, there are bad things out there. So I don't get my software that way, you know? Right. So I feel like I'm pretty secure on Android, even though it can be exploited just in the same way as iOS.
Yeah.
So, as long as you have common sense, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Are there more people that jailbreak their phones on Android though than on iOS? I think that's probably very true, isn't it?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think
usually the people that root them are like you, Tim, you, Phil, when you were doing Android, because you guys know what you're doing.
Well, but what
No. Tim knows what he's
doing. Okay, so Tim knows.
we want to run the latest version of Android, and a lot of these manufacturers, they just don't do upgrades. HTC is pretty good about it, and the Nexus program is probably the best, where you do get it directly from Google. But everybody else doesn't either ever upgrade them, or they do them very late in the game. So in the early days, in order to get the next version, you had to run CyanogenMod or one of the other ROMs. I feel much less temptation to do that now, because KitKat is really a pretty stable OS, and Lollipop looks like it's a big leap, and I'd like to run it, but I'm not going to root to be able to get it sooner. I'll just wait and see what happens down the line.
Yeah. Well, I was actually pretty pumped about this next article. Walmart to sell $99 Windows 8.1 tablet on Black Friday, one that you can actually buy right now for $149.
Have you actually seen these though in the flesh?
Well, I was going to ask if anybody had, because what are they, garbage?
No, but
humma.
But they're not great either. I've been looking seriously at these because for doing Skype, for like doing this, just to have a full on laptop that's also a tablet, I find that to be very attractive, and the prices are ridiculous here.
Right.
But, something with 1 gig of RAM and a low resolution screen. And then when you go into compatibility mode, or whatever they call it, the desktop mode, on an 8-inch tablet, it's like tiny, tiny, tiny Windows desktop. So I think these things have to be bigger to be usable. But I like what Microsoft's trying to do here. What they've done is they basically licensed Windows for either free or something close to free to these manufacturers.
Well, and this thing comes with a 1-year subscription to Office 365 Personal.
Right, which is like, what, $70?
I think
normally.
Yeah, so, but don't we get that free on the Mac now? On the iPhone, I mean?
You get the apps free, but if you want the full-on cloud version of Windows. Oh.
And if you want the 1 terabyte Office. OneDrive and all that, you got to subscribe.
Yeah, so you could get this for $99, and maybe people will do that. Well, they'll buy these for $99, even though the performance is kind of crappy, but just use their Office 365 subscription for a year.
Yeah,
sure.
Because it's very close, right? So I think that if I were to actually pull the trigger on something like this, I'll probably get something closer to a couple $100 rather than the $99, just because you want more memory, you want a faster processor.
Yeah.
Well, plus Walmart isn't doing Black Friday. I thought they're going to spread it out over the whole week because people were like getting trampled to death.
Yeah, but they're still going to do the Black Friday day.
Well, actually, they're going to do that, but they're going to be open on Thanksgiving as well.
Yeah, at 8 o'clock Thanksgiving evening, 8 p.m., you'll be able to
join the
600 or 800 people in line at your favorite Walmart.
Something about getting trampled to death on Thanksgiving that just doesn't sit right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something about getting trampled to death anytime doesn't really sit right.
The only way I would stand in line is if it was something like a NetJet subscription for $99. Fly anywhere in the world for $99 for a year. I'd wait in line.
I'll get the sleeping bag, honey. We're going to Walmart.
That's right. That's right. Oh my God. I still thought it was cool though.
No, it's interesting. I would be interested in this $29 Android tablet though. I mean, how great would that be?
Which one's that now?
It's in the article. It says that though, by the way, they're selling iPad minis for $199, which are the first generation version, or a $29 Android tablet. Like, okay.
Yeah. Well, now that Microsoft, according to The Verge, has stuck Skype for Web, they're doing a beta, and it's right now only available for Windows, and it requires a plugin, but they're moving toward a WebRTC version of Skype, and that's the real-time communication protocol. And so there was a lot of buzz. There's a Google group for Chromebook, and I was reading some of the buzz on that, and everybody's like, "No, I want Skype in a browser right now." You know, I mean, just there's a lot of pent up demand for that. So I think they're gonna really expand the use of Skype by doing this.
Yes, they will.
Yeah. Would you guys use it?
I would definitely, because I have a Chromebook, so that's one of the missing things. And even though I can run Android apps in there now, the Skype version for Android doesn't run well enough and predictably enough to do, say, this podcast. So.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Okay. So, what else is going on?
Well, let's see. We were talking about, I don't know. I think it's security time. That's what I think.
You do?
Yeah, I think it is. Because I, there it is.
It is time for Steve's security tip of the week.
What happened to the horses?
Well,
horses.
Because this security tip of the week is don't stick it in unless you know where it's been.
There you go.
And
oh boy.
Okay, so there are two.
So you have to tick the explicit tag now.
Yeah, exactly. So there are two researchers at this Germany-based company, SR Labs, that delivered a presentation on something they called Bad USB. And basically what it was a code to change the firmware on a USB drive so you could put malware on it and exploit it. So as soon as you put it in, it would run the malware on a Windows machine for sure, but then also on OS X and now Linux. And at the time, they weren't going to publish the code, but two other hackers worked out how to exploit what's called bad USB, and they published their code on GitHub for everybody. And so the bad news is this is one of the ways that companies get into, or excuse me, black hat hackers get into companies and governments. They do things like take a nice looking USB drive with a Procter & Gamble label on it or some brand, and they drop it in the parking lot. And somebody picks it up and they walk in and they're like, geez, I wonder what's on here. And they put it in their computer, and now that malware is on the network. And it's done over and over and over and over and over again. And that's already happened. Well, now it's trivial for anybody to do that. So the tip is, because the operating system companies, Ubuntu, Microsoft, and Apple are all taking steps to make sure there's no auto-run capability with even hacked firmware. And so keep your software up to date. That's always a good thing to do. Don't open any files you don't recognize. And just like safe sex, don't plug any devices into your computer unless you know where they've been. And that's my tip of the week.
Outstanding.
Is there like a USB drive condom you can also use?
Unfortunately, there's not. I'm sorry.
I know. I think I'm going to try a Kickstarter.
Yeah. There you go.
What a great idea.
Well, actually, you know what? In all seriousness, I thought about how great it would be to have a little security box that you could buy for $10 that you could plug the USB thumb drive into, and it would check to make sure that there wasn't anything on it, any auto run malware or anything before you used it.
You could have like a little screen, and if it was good, a little happy face comes up, and if it was bad, the devil's face would come up.
You know what? You always do this to me. You just minimize the importance of ideas. I'm kidding. No. Anyway.
All right. Let's talk about the cool thing of the week. Yeah. Come on, Tim. Come on. What's your cool thing of the week, Tim?
Android 5.0 Lollipop. And I put in a link to the review at The Verge. And it looks like a really good upgrade to Android.
But you're not going to take it yet.
Well, no, my box doesn't have it on there yet. My new phablet. So once it does, and I'm sure it will, because it's running pretty much stock Android KitKat right now. I'll be looking forward to downloading that and doing the upgrade.
And what's good about it?
They've really changed the design a lot to be very clean and different. They've put in a lot of other kinds of features that have been somewhat missing, or they've shaved off a lot of sort of rough edges, because Android has always been a little bit rougher than iOS from a design and usability standpoint. It's always sort of had the features behind the scenes, but now it really, I think, comes up and stands as a worthy competitor, I think, now, side by side with iOS.
Hmm. Interesting. So, yep. I'll have to check that out. I wonder if are they available in demo units? Do you think any of the stores have it yet, running Lollipop?
I'm sure, yeah. If you can see one of the Nexus 6s, which I'm not sure if that's at retail yet, but those are, ship with Lollipop on it. But I'm sure there will be a number of other places. Any place that sells Nexus 9s or 7s, those have Lollipop on them.
Well, so. Apparently the buzz is that if you want to see the latest and greatest and what's new, especially in mobile product, is to go to the Verizon Destination Store at the Mall of America, because they that's one of the places they put things very, very quickly. Yeah, and they do it apparently right when it comes out, or it's they'll get a preview version of it. So,
yeah, the Nexus 6 is like one of the first ones where it's all across every carrier has it. So I imagine if you went to Verizon, they probably would have it.
Oh.
So you could probably check it out.
Interesting. Graham, what's your cool thing of the week?
Graham had to bail, remember?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry. Well, never mind, Graham. Phil, what's your cool thing?
This is where I said we'd revisit the whole discussion about net neutrality.
Oh, brothers.
So it is my cool thing of the week is John Oliver's rant on net neutrality on his HBO show.
Well, so. and it got picked up. There was a lot of buzz. And in fact, The Verge had an article about the internal memos that were going around at Verizon,
right. Yeah.
about this particular spot. So this is funny.
So that was if you get a chance to take a look at the link, you've got the link on the page and check it out, John Oliver. And John Oliver has really kind of gone on to be this British version of John Stewart, but he did that stint for Stewart while he was working on Rosewater, and it really led him to take this gig at HBO, where he basically does a John Stewart or a Daily Show sort of a thing, kind of a weekly show. So, so I think that they also have a little bit more time to put in some really great time on production and that sort of thing. So it was a great show.
Yep. Well, so, I put in, I'm helping a buddy try to figure out how to do a remote backup strategy, and it's not a good idea to use Time Machine as a remote backup strategy.
Right.
But there's the Time Capsule from Apple, and that's allows you to do backup over Wi-Fi. And so we were looking at that, and he was talking about $300 and so on and so forth. And then I came across this article build a $35 time capsule. So that's like the airport router with a hard drive in it, right? And you can back up things automatically to it on OS X. And you can build a Raspberry Pi Time Machine backup server for $35. Now,
well, it costs a little bit more than that.
I was just going to say, a lot of people started pointing out in comments, not on his post, but elsewhere, you know, what about a case? What about Wi-Fi? What about an SD card connector? You know, yada, yada, yada. And it's really, people are saying it, you know, it's more like $150 to $200 is.
Well, it depends on the hard drive you put in. So if you already have a hanging around large hard drive, you can stick it, you can plug into this thing, and you already have a open SD card that's 8 gigs or larger, you know, and if you already have a Wi-Fi dongle that works with the Raspberry Pi, then you've got everything you need. But if you don't, you have to buy all that stuff.
Right, right.
Right.
Well, and unlike CrashPlan or Backblaze or these other
Carbonite,
these online type of backup scenarios, almost all of them say, please seed your drive so that you can back up your 3 terabytes or 4 terabytes and then send us the drive. And that's how you start the backup process, because then we start doing incremental backups after that. Because, you know, sending 3 terabytes, uploading at, 13 or 15 megabits per second is going to take like a month. Or no, 21 days, I think it takes to upload. And that, you know, but that depends on the download speed at these various services, which might be as slow as a megabit per second. So that could take, 45 days. And so at any rate, this stuff is not easy to do. And that's why these services, I think, are, for most people, are just a really easy way to go. But I still thought it was cool, so I had to throw it in.
It is.
It is the cool thing.
Yeah.
I actually might build one of these things because I have all this stuff hanging around.
Really? Neat.
I do. I think I might do that.
Yeah. Report back. Actually, what I would love to have you do is, if you remember, Leo Laporte had something that a woman built for him that worked for him for a while called Skypeosaurus.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually had a PC rack that had four PC cards in there, you know, those Dell Blades, and each one of them ran a separate Skype channel, and then they fed it into a mixing board, each Skype channel, so that each one was independent, and you could, you know, if somebody's signal was really low or crappy, you could clean it up and fix it in post and all of that. And I would love to have a Raspberry Pi Skypeosaurus. But then you'd have to have 4 monitors or somehow separate them on, you know, have four displays.
You could do remote access. So you could run, some sort of remote access, like a VNC sort of deal on it.
Yeah. And so, then just them in separate windows.
Yeah.
That would work. Cool. So build one of those for me, please. Tim's birthday tomorrow, so we have to buy him something or build him something, not the other way around.
You know, I'm not sure if the Raspberry Pi, even the B Plus, which is the brand new one, which is slightly increase in performance, if that's enough performance to run Skype reliably.
Oh.
I mean, it's possible you can run Skype on these things. I may do some tests with you, Steve, on my Raspberry Pi and see how good Skype is, and then if it's usable, maybe we can build something.
That'd be cool. That'd be real cool.
Because we'd have to have three, maybe four of them.
If we had a guest, yeah, four.
Yeah, and for those to work.
Yeah.
And that would be what? So the three. It'd be like $150 just for the pies, plus you'd need a bunch of SD cards and.
We could bundle it with a mixing board, and we could sell a podcast kit. You know?
There you go.
Yeah. Cool.
We call it the ultimate podcast rig.
We've just witnessed the birth of another small startup, ladies and gentlemen. Right.
Wait a minute. Adam Curry's already got that going. So
who does?
Adam Curry.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's got the ultimate podcast rig, and some company's actually building it.
Okay.
So you can buy it. The one he uses.
All right. Okay. Upcoming events. The only new thing really is Edu-Celerate, Twin Cities Games for Learning and Social Causes on the 18th. And TIES is coming up. And then you put on Mobile Twin Cities. Phil. Yep.
We actually had to cancel the last Mobile Twin Cities because of the snow. Though gotcha. It was really, really more of a threat of snow than snow itself. But so we have graciously, our two speakers from this month have said that they would come in next month for their presentation. So that happens on the 8th of December. So feel free to sign up for that. We'll talk about wireframes and then NDAs as well. So,
is that in the evening or during the day?
That's in the evening.
Yeah, they all are. Yeah.
6 p.m.
Cool.
We only have one thing to fear, and that's snow itself.
Exactly.
Yep. So, All right.
Great. Well, so I'm sure there'll be something to talk about again. If not, we'll fall back on the healthcare and net neutrality and talk politics here next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast, starring Ayn Rand. All right. That's take care, you guys.
Minivate shrug.